All right, should we get started? Just so we make sure we've got the right people in the room, you haven't wandered into some session you weren't expecting. This is all about building applications in SharePoint Online in a hybrid world. Anybody, feel free to leave if that's not what you're here to hear about. The session will be reasonably techie and developer-y, so we're going to talk about quite technical topics. We're going to talk about Azure and SharePoint Online and service bus and things like that, so that if you're not so technically inclined, some parts will be pretty technically oriented and we may lose you. But I like to keep these fairly casual, so if you have any questions at any time, please just stick up your hand and let me know, and we'll try to get them answered as best we can. But we have quite a lot of material to get through and a few demos that we're going to do today of some running code and so forth, and also be asking for some audience participation as part of these to help me out. So first up, who here uses SharePoint Online today? And if you are a developer, keep your hands up. And if you are a developer that's satisfied with your ability to customize and edit SharePoint Online, keep your hands up. Oh, there's one person who's satisfied. That's pretty good. Do you work for Microsoft, sir? No, okay. So basically, this session is about showing you a few tips and techniques and methods for customizing and developing with SharePoint Online. And we all live in a world where data doesn't necessarily live in the cloud yet, right? We've got on-prem line of business systems and so forth that we want to be able to leverage as data repositories. We want to be able to send data to them and retrieve data from them and so forth. And so really this session is about giving you a few ideas on how you can do that with what we have today. And we know it's not a perfect world right now with being able to do these things, but there are some things that you can take advantage of today to help alleviate these problems. Anybody got an example of something you wish you could do in SharePoint Online as a developer? MVC? Okay, any others? Sorry, what was that, sir? Timer jobs? Yep. Anybody got a third? I'll try to address these as we go through the talk. So if I forget to bring up how to solve the timer job problem and how to solve the MVC problem, then please let me know. But my name is Chris Johnson. I'm a general manager of Provoke Solutions. We're an SI up in Seattle. And as you can probably tell, I'm not from around here. I moved to the States in 2007, but I'm from New Zealand. So are there any Australians in the room? That's a different country, by the way. We like to think it is, right. We don't have the same currency, and they're all convicts, and we're nice. So I'm a Kiwi on loan to the US, and I'm based in Seattle. But in November last year, I left Microsoft. I spent 10 years at Microsoft working in a very range of different roles, but last role I spent working on the SharePoint product management team and worked on the 2010 release of SharePoint and the engineering team. And my contact details are down the bottom here. You can contact me on Twitter, or my email address is there, and I blog at looselytype.net. By the way, I hate loosely typed languages. It was just a decent domain name I could find. All right. So what are we going to cover? Well, first up, we're just going to go quickly through some SharePoint Online fundamentals just to set the stage of what's possible and what's not given the technologies and the features that are available in SharePoint Online for developers. Then we're going to go through a bunch of different scenarios. I call them simple, bridging the divide, and reverse. So the simple scenarios are going to be about putting a widget into SharePoint Online that consumes data from somewhere else. Bridging the divide is all about solving that problem of how you get data from inside your firewall to SharePoint Online or to some other system out there on the internet, maybe another service, for example, or somewhere on-prem like a database or what have you. And then reverse is, in many of these situations, we want to go and get data from somewhere and bring it into SharePoint Online, but there are also situations where the reverse is true, right? Where you have some sort of on-prem system that you want to be able to interact with SharePoint Online using, and you want to be able to grab data from it or push data to it or do something along those lines. And so we're going to talk about how you do that. It's a little tricky at the moment. And then briefly at the end, we're going to talk about identity and security, mainly around some of the options that are available to you in the scenarios that you see in the demos. And then we'll just wrap up for questions at the end. So what do I mean by hybrid applications? Well, my sort of definition, and caveat, this is only my definition. Everybody's probably got a different answer here. Is for the purposes of this talk, I just sort of set the stage as being a hybrid app is what I'm going to talk about, SharePoint Online, plus some data code and logic elsewhere. And elsewhere could be somewhere else in the cloud, or it could be on-prem. But basically, that's my definition. So if you have an alternate, please pipe up and let me know where I've gone wrong. Okay, so we're just going to cover off a couple of slides on some SharePoint Online development fundamentals for those who are new in the room and just want to know some of the options that are available out of the box. We'll go through these, but if you want me to spend more detail on these, please stick your hand up and let me know, and I'll come and chat with you afterwards. So basically, SharePoint Online development is, I bucket into these three buckets, sort of simple, intermediate, and advanced. The simple development really could be really considered configuration, right? It's not necessarily writing code that you hit F5 to compile or debug or what have you. Things you can do through the browser, you can build very lightweight applications for things like tracking and so forth, through IE or whatever browser you're using with SharePoint Online, much like you'd do with SharePoint on-prem. Sort of the more user-centric, power user-centric option there. Intermediate is where you kind of step up to the next level of tools, right, where you might want to use SharePoint Designer, which lets you do things like workflow and add external content types and that sort of thing to your site that you can sort of step up from what you can do through the browser. And then finally, Visual Studio is sort of the advanced section where you step up to actually having to write code that's not necessarily just JavaScript. You can do that through SharePoint Designer, obviously, but things like C# code and writing sandbox solutions to respond to events and libraries and so forth, writing web parts that can be deployed in the sandbox and deployed into SharePoint Online, that's all available. But there are some limitations there, and I've got a slide on that in a second. With these, you can also use, say, the client-side object model for building like Silverlight or JavaScript or .NET applications. Some of those can go in the sandbox, like a Silverlight web part, for example, and it could use the client-side object model to call into SharePoint, and all that stuff works in SharePoint Online. So that might be an option for you too. So there are some things that it doesn't support that you need to be aware of, and pretty much the basics are there's no farm or web application support. You can't dig into certain features at an administrative level through things like sandbox code or the client-side object model that you have to be aware of if you're coming from the world of developing full trust solutions. And by full trust, I mean farm deployed solutions on-prem. You get things like access to the GAC. You can fiddle around with the web config file to your heart's content. You can put files down in the file system if you want, all those sorts of things. Timer jobs was brought up as well. You don't have access to timer jobs in SharePoint Online, for example. But really, the access to APIs really is limited by site collection boundary. So you can use APIs to get into lists and libraries, those sorts of things, but you can't get up to create new site collections or out of your site collection boundary without going to something like calling web services and impersonating people and so forth. Also, one of the other limitations is you can't get out of the sandbox right now. So, for example, you can't call an external web service directly from sandbox code, which is pretty limiting. There was a change, I forget when it was, late last year, I believe, or early this year, when SharePoint Online was updated to be able to support external data sources for business connectivity services, so you could connect up to a SQL DB, like SQL Azure or something, or a web service out there on the internet, and use that to drive external lists and so forth. The only problem with that is that the APIs from the sandbox are limited for that, so you can't call that to get the data there. But you can bring them into lists and use them, much like you'd use an external content type elsewhere in SharePoint. And then finally, sandbox solutions, just covering a little bit of a little bit more detail on this. It's a limited API set, so it covers Microsoft.SharePoint's object model, but it's a cut-down version, obviously, to limit what you can do, and it's scoped basically to the site collection that you're currently in. Visual Studio has added some quite nice support for sandbox solutions. You get project templates in Visual Studio to be able to start a new sandbox solution. They also limit the IntelliSense you get on while you're writing code in a sandbox solution now, so that you don't try and use APIs that aren't available to you in the sandbox, for example. And then also they have sort of integrated F5 debugging and packaging for sandbox solutions, much like a regular farm solution. So you can go build your sandbox and deploy it to a local on-prem on-box SharePoint instance for development and debugging. At the end of the day, you take your WSP and you upload it into the sandbox, wherever that happens to be, and activate it, and then your web parts and so forth are available. And then it executes in that protected environment. They can't just run rogue and run whatever code you like either. So you get a quota, you assign quota points to a particular site collection. They run in a sandbox, and then depending on how much CPU you use and so forth, you get different quota points, and you only get to use a certain number. And there's a whole lot of little checks and balances when sandbox solutions run so that processes can't run rogue and drag down a whole lot of other processes and sites and so forth as well. So they eventually get disabled if they're really naughty. Okay, so that's a little bit about sandbox solutions. The client object model, for those who don't know, is just a remote API for being able to interact with SharePoint. It mostly covers all the data APIs that you can get access to for lists and libraries and so forth. You can include it with the shipper, a .NET version, a Silverlight version, and a JavaScript version. However, having said that, the protocol between those libraries that are shipped, the protocol between that and SharePoint is open and documented in the protocol documentation for SharePoint. So really, it's not really limited to what platform you can call us from. You could use it from anything you like if you were so inclined to dig in and build and work with the protocol directly. So this is available if you want to write a system that's remote that talks to SharePoint. And I'll show you an example of this. We're going to use the client-side object model to push data into SharePoint Online a little later in the talk, and some of the issues you have to deal with around authentication with SharePoint Online and so forth. Okay, so enough of the fundamentals. Let's start talking about what options are available in a hybrid world for SharePoint Online. So what we're going to do is over the course of sort of three or four demos and slides, we're going to build out a solution that uses SharePoint Online, and we're going to add some things to it and show you some web parts and so forth that I've built and some techniques that you can use if you need to go and build one of these yourselves. We're also going to use Windows Azure to help with this process, and so I'll show you some of the things we have in Windows Azure that can help bridge the divide between on-prem and Office 365. And then obviously I have a SharePoint server running on a virtual machine on my laptop that is ultimately going to be the line of business system or where we're the on-prem data repository for where we're going to get this data from. So it's a little difficult to demo because I've got my VM running on my laptop. I've got SharePoint Online out in the world, so you just have to keep track of, I'll try to point out which tab I'm on in IE to show you when we're on online versus on-prem. Okay, so the first scenario is the simple one, consuming and displaying some data. So, a big complaint about the sandbox is you can't get out of it. And there are no external calls, so you can't make a web service call, for example, to go and get data from somewhere else. And so this could be, from the outset, fairly limiting. But we do have some options around what we can do from the browser to help bridge that divide. So, for example, we can write JavaScript that calls other systems. We could put a Silverlight component on the page that calls another system. We could do that with Flash. There are, of course, some cross-domain problems that we're going to have to deal with around this. If your domain name is different for your SharePoint Online environment from your system that you're ultimately calling, then there are checks and balances in browsers to make sure you can't just start randomly grabbing stuff from other origins without having to do some work. So we'll talk about that during the first demo. But so with Silverlight, for example, and Flash, you can get around these problems with things like the client access policy.xml file, which defines which domains are safe callers and safe origins and so forth to help you get across origin boundaries. With JavaScript, we have a technique. Well, there are a couple of techniques that are in development. One is JSONP, JSON with padding. I'm not entirely sure what the padding part's all about. Somebody can explain that to me, but that helps, and we're going to use that in our first demo to run some JavaScript on our page that calls out to another system and get data. And there's also another standard being adopted by browsers called cross, I think it's called, somebody correct me if I get the acronym wrong, cross origin something or others, four-letter acronym, I can't remember. And that is all about setting headers in your HTTP requests and the server saying whether it's allowed to serve data to that cross domain. And that's sort of in development. Most of the browsers support it today, and that's another technique you could use to get around cross-domain problems too, potentially. Okay, so let's jump into a quick demo here. Let me just log into my machine. There we go. All right. So for the purpose of these demos are all strung together. They all depend on each other. So I have the whole thing running end to end across all three demos, but we're going to focus on different parts of it as we chop it up. So in this first part, we're going to look at that simple scenario of building a web part. We're going to use some JavaScript and jQuery to call cross-domain to a WCF service that sends us JSONP data that we can go and display in SharePoint Online. So the reason for JSONP is obviously the cross-domain reasons. I've built a visual web part I've deployed into the sandbox in SharePoint Online, and I'll walk through the code about the showing the JavaScript and JSON and jQuery that we use to go and fetch that data and so forth. So the web service I've deployed into Windows Azure for reasons that will become apparent in the next demo. Giving a little bit of explanation about what that does, it's actually calling back to a line of business system on-prem. How it does it, we'll get into in the next demo, but for the purposes of this demo, it's a web service that serves JSONP out in Windows Azure. So I just want to show you what this looks like to begin with. So let me flip to my SharePoint Online site here. So a pretty bog-standard SharePoint Online site. Now, I've got some data at the back of that web service, which is just some basic sales data. And so the web part that I've built, let me just flip to edit mode here and go in and add the web part that I've built. First, we're just going to show you what it looks like once we've had the whole thing built. I'll explain that error in a second. Save this page. Okay. I want to overwrite the page. There we go. Okay, so you see this little error down the bottom here that says, message, it says only secure content is displayed. There are two things you have to consider when getting data cross-site. So one is obviously cross-origin problems. The second one that we're dealing with JSONP, and the second one is, in my case, my web service that I'm getting that JSON from is not HTTPS, and my SharePoint Online site is HTTPS. So the browser's just warning me that there's some JavaScript going off to a non-HTTPS source to go and grab that data. Now, in a perfect world, I would have added my certificate and secured my web service with HTTPS, and then this warning wouldn't come up. But that's why you're seeing it. So I'll click Show All Content. And so simply this web part, I'm no graphical whiz or anything like that. This is simply calling that web service, grabbing the JSONP back, and then giving us some sales data here. There's a couple of lines of data with different numbers and so forth. I haven't added much formatting around this, but you'll see what's happening behind the scenes when we step through this. So this is deployed as a visual web part, a sandbox solution, and I used the Visual WebPart template for sandbox solutions in Visual Studio. If you go in Visual Studio and you don't see Visual WebPart with sandbox around it afterwards, there are two. There's one with sandbox and one without sandbox. Then you need to go and install the Visual Studio Power Tools for SharePoint that add some new templates and so forth to Visual Studio to give you these additional capabilities. And so I've gone and deployed that into the sandbox, and here you can see SP Sales Demo is my solution that I've added. I've activated it, and that's why I get the web part available. So now let's take a look at how that thing is built. So I flip to Visual Studio here. I've got a couple of different projects that I want to show you. Let me just stop debugging that for a second. As we go through these other projects will be explained in a little more detail, but the ones I want to focus on right now are just the SP Sales Demo one, which is the sandbox solution with the web part in it. So there are a couple of things I've done with this. First, I've added a module which deploys a file into SharePoint when it loads to load JS Render, which is the little jQuery, I don't know what the right word is, extension or library, I think it's library, that helps me take that data and spit out some sort of formatting. So I want to deploy that. It's not part of the standard jQuery libraries, so I just need to deploy that file into SharePoint. And so what I'm doing there is if I dig into the elements XML file, I'm deploying this into our site assets folder in SharePoint. And so when this solution is installed and activated, this file gets written into the site assets folder for the site, and then it's available to any pages that want to use it. Okay, so that gets us our JS render file. The next one is obviously the web part itself. So let me just cancel that. I just want to see the code. Ah, come back. Cancel. Let's just let that fail for a second. This is my... Let me go all dark on you and have to use a notepad. Goodness gracious me. All right. So let's take a look inside here. I just want to open it with Notepad. Who thought I'd be having to resort to Notepad? All right, so the web part file is there's real basic. There's no code behind this web part. It's all just HTML and JavaScript. And it's pretty straightforward. The first thing is we have a couple of script includes, which are for jQuery and for the JS render file I've deployed to SharePoint. Then we have some script blocks, which are the template to use for rendering each row of the data. So this is a JS render technique. I think it's kind of a replacement for the old templating way I used to work with data in jQuery. I'm not entirely au fait with all the layout side of it, but it basically gives you the ability to iterate through a set of data and spit out a whole bunch of data on the page in whatever format you like. And then we have the main script block. So this is where the call is made. So here I'm using the AJAX call of jQuery to go and fetch some data. And I'm calling this particular URL down the bottom here, which is cjsdemoapp.cloudapp.net. And then there's some goop after it, which is the path to my WCF service. I want to get the sales data from that WCF service. And then at the end, there's some parameters here which specify that I want it. I want the reply format in JSON, and that I want a callback parameter added, which is a way of turning it into a JSONP so that it knows which JavaScript function to call when the data comes back. Now, the reason all this works is pretty convoluted and crazy, but most of the time, JavaScript can't go call a different origin web service, for example, at least not without some of these techniques. And the way JSONP works, from my rudimentary understanding of it, is that script tags, so these little suckers here, are the only things that browsers let call cross-domain. And so, for example, here I'm going and getting a JavaScript file from another domain. right? So that works. I can include jQuery, and it will run. So the way JSONP works is at runtime, jQuery adds a new script element to the DOM of the page, pointing it at the source for your JSONP, and when it comes back, the browser interprets the source, which happens to be a function call, which calls the function in the main body of your page, and it can deal with the data that's passed. So that's the way around it. All the main browsers support it, and that's the way I understand how it works. Anyway, so that's our origin for our JSONP. I say that I want JSONP as the response type, and then this is the parseResults function. You can see on the end here I've got the callback as parseResults. And when I come back and do parseResults, I simply do this JSRender function for each of the items in the array that comes back. I want to go and render them using the template that I've defined above, which is the sales template. So we just get a row for each of the results. So that's the that's super simple, right? A little bit of jQuery and a little bit of JS render, pretty straightforward. Now let's see if Visual Studio's come back from the grave. No, oh dear me. Let's cancel that. Can I can that entirely? Yay. All right, let's try that again. So I just wanted to step through what the back end of the service looks like, just to show you a little bit about how it's set up and what it's doing for JSONP. SPO hybrid apps. Actually, let's do that when we jump to the next demo, because I think then we can show it all end to end. All right, let's jump back. Okay, so that's the simple scenario. We can add some jQuery or Silverlight or Flash to go cross-domain and go grab some data. But that does mean that your data needs to be available somehow, right? So if you think about this building enterprise apps, this could be somebody inside the firewall, still using SharePoint Online, but those destination services could still be inside your firewall as well and use the browser as basically the go-between between those two disparate locations. So that's a possibility. It could be all inside the firewall. You don't have to host these services out on the internet. But the problem comes is when that person leaves the office with their laptop and they still want to use their SharePoint Online solution, if it's an internal WCF service or line of business system or what have you, you've got this problem where they still can't get access to the data, right? Because they're outside the firewall, they can't get to that end location, and things don't work right. So that brings us to the next part of the next section of the presentation, which is what about if your line of business data isn't sort of beautifully, conveniently exposed out there on the internet? What should you do? And there are a few techniques for bridging this divide that we can talk about. You know, this is obviously super common. Everybody's going to be in this hybrid world for a number of years to come, and we're going to want to build apps that talk with things like SQL and CRM and SAP and insert your random lob system that you've developed over years, right? It's going to take some time. It may not ever happen that people may not ever want to move that stuff to the cloud. We're going to live in this hybrid world for years and years to come. Lots of people don't expose this to the web beautifully and conveniently today. Some people might. There might be some databases that are available. There might be some web services that your organization implements, for example. But generally, the rule of thumb is nobody's doing this right now, or very, very few people are doing this right now. And often, they don't have the system set up to do things like reverse proxying calls to web services that are on your inside your firewall to outside the firewall. And that involves the IT department, right? That stuff's hard. I like to call the IT department the no department. So how do you get this stuff to SharePoint Online? Well, there are a couple of techniques. One, you could go to the no department and say, hey, I want to stick in a reverse proxy into our environment so that you can publish certain things out to the internet. And those could be web services that you build internally. Here I'm showing a phone, but this could be SharePoint Online calling through a solution like UAG to get access to internal data. So that's one option. This could be any reverse proxy. It doesn't have to be UAG. One of the cool things UAG does, actually, is it can do forms authentication to NTLM translation if you set it up, so that on the outside, from the outside world, you authenticate with your with your endpoint using FormsAuth, but on the inside, UAG is doing NTLM authentication to whatever that system happens to be. It's effectively impersonating you on your behalf. And so that's nice because it means that you don't have to fiddle around with the system at the back end to support different authentication mechanisms. You can leave it using Windows Auth and then front-end it with some other authentication type that's easier to deal with over the internet. In this case, I show it on the intranet being SharePoint, but that could equally be SQL or SAP or whatever. So UAG or reverse proxy is one option. But like I said, there are some problems with that. A, you've got to have all the hardware to do it, and so forth. So what are some options if you don't want to do that? Well, you've probably heard during the week a ton of talk about Windows Azure and the keynote and the various different sessions. And there are a few things that gives us that we can help with this problem. Service Bus is one. I'm going to show you an example of that. ACS to deal with authentication of these external requests, that's another. We can leverage that to help make sure that requests to our services over the internet are secured using your enterprise credentials and so forth. And we can use ACS and ADFS to do that. We could also go sort of a little further and use Azure Connect or Virtual Network to hook up on-prem network with the Azure Cloud, and then we can access your internal stuff over that network. So that's that could be an option too. That's sort of the more heavyweight option versus Service Bus that we're going to show you today. So Azure Virtual Network, as I mentioned, I won't go into all this detail, but basically, you heard Scott talk about in the keynote about the ability to connect a device on your on-prem to Azure and have, make all the networking hookups so that you can connect virtual machines or apps in the cloud to on-prem and have it all sort of Azure, let Azure take care of tunneling all that between your environment. It's effectively, a VPN to a cloud service, right? That could be an option for you. You may already have something like that set up. Service Bus is, hands up who knows what Service Bus is or has used Service Bus? A couple people? Okay, so just briefly covering on what Service Bus does is it basically gives you a way to initiate a connection out into Azure from on-prem and then to be able to use that connection to proxy calls and so forth back to your on-prem solution from external sources. So for example, in this diagram, you can see over on the left-hand side in the green boxes our on-prem systems and on the right is our cloud-based systems. And so in our case here, we've got SharePoint, SharePoint or a line of business system at the bottom on the left there. That's going to be our data source. We'd simply deploy some sort of process, whether it be a Windows service or WCF service that's hosted somewhere that initiates the Service Bus connection and registers with Service Bus. And so when it does that, it reaches out onto Windows Azure and says, hey, I'm listening on this particular endpoint, and here's the contract that we're going to use to talk to each other. And then Windows Azure says, cool, you've got one of these namespaces registered, I'm going to hook you up to that. And then when callers call that endpoint in Windows Azure, it'll pass the, it'll proxy the calls between you on the outside, it'll call back across that connection to the on-prem listener who then can go and do whatever it wants with the line of business system. And there are, we'll talk about authentication at the end around this, but there are quite a few different auth options that you can pick from to help secure these calls externally. And so you could have things like phone applications or desktop applications or SharePoint Online calling the Service Bus endpoint in Azure, which proxies it on your behalf. And so that's how we can sort of bridge that divide between on-prem and the cloud so that when you're folks leave the office, they can still get access to your stuff without having to invest in reverse proxies at your perimeter or exposing data some other way out on the internet. Okay, so let's take a look at what this one looks like. Let me flip to the demo machine here. This is where some of the other projects come into play. So there are really two projects that we're going to look at for this part of the demo. The first is the sales data service project. So this is, in the previous diagram that you saw, I had a little box there called Listener on-prem. And so for the purposes of this demo, I just have a console application, which is the sales data service. It's just a console app that runs on-prem, right, for my demo that's on my laptop, that registers out with Azure and says, hey, I've got this data service that I want to make available, and I'm the one you should send it to when you get requests externally. And so really all it is this console app that does that registration, and if we dig into the program.cs file, this is where it starts this listener service and hosts it. So it's a WCF service that's hosted inside a command line app. And then it goes and runs it. Now in the background, in the app config, I've got all of the wire up for hooking up to Service Bus. And so I'll zip up these demo files and I'll put them on my blog so that you can go and grab that and look at how the config works. But effectively, you need to give it your namespace that you've registered in Service Bus, that you can do that very simply through kind of a 3 or 4 click thing through the Azure Management Console. You give it a name like Chris's awesome demo or whatever, and it says, yes, it's available. And then you register that, and it gives you a secret token that that you need to add to your listener, so that when your listener reaches out to Azure and says, I want to listen on CJ's awesome demo, and here's my secret token, so you know it's a valid listener. And so that happens in the app config file. And so when the program starts up, it just starts this WCF service. And if we look at that WCF service, it does some pretty basic stuff. So it really only has one call called get sales. And it just builds, for this part of the demo, it just builds a couple of rows. I've got a couple of rows going into my sales data here, and then returns it. Now also down the bottom here, I've got some code that goes and calls off into my virtual machine to go and get that same sales data out of SharePoint. And so we'll try that in a second as we go through this demo. So right now it just has these two rows that are requested. Now if I start this up, if I start a new instance of it, I just get that console. It takes a few seconds to hook up into Azure, and it'll give us a little notice that says, yeah, I'm done registering. Any moment now. Okay, so it basically said that it's up and running, it's registered with Azure, and it's ready to start accepting connections. And when we get a connection to that sales data call, I've got a console write line in there, so you'll start seeing lines pop up in this console app. And if anybody was sneaky to remember that URL, you can start hitting it, and you'll start seeing this data come back. But I want to show you what it looks like in if we just hit that service in Fiddler. So here I've got the URL again, that exact same URL, cjsdemoapp.cloudapp.net to my sales data service, and it's going to request the sales data in that JSON format. Now if we run this, we should get we got a request for sales data, and then if we go back into our inspectors here and take a look at the raw stuff for this, it was a simple GET request, and we ended up passing some JSON P back. So that's what the response looks like. And JavaScript has some, or jQuery and JavaScript have some nice techniques for being able to deal with JSON and parsing it for you, and you don't have to deal with all that yourself. That's why it's nice to be able to support that for web websites, or JavaScript code on websites, I should say. Okay. So that's that piece working end to end. But there are a couple more pieces to this puzzle. We're going to wire up SharePoint to it so that instead of just getting the static data that I've implemented in my console app, we're going to reach into a SharePoint list to get the data, which was, you know, it could be a SQL app or a CRM or whatever you've got on-prem that you want to talk to. So let's do that first. And then I just want to show you the piece in the middle, which is that Azure web service and how it wires up to Service Bus to get those connections from the console app and returns the data. So let's comment a couple of things out here. Let's take out those lines of hard-coded of hard-coded responses, and let's comment in this stuff down here, and I'll just briefly talk through it to show you what it does. Whoops. So this WinFMIR machine that you can see here in this URL, that's an on-prem SharePoint instance that I've got running in a virtual machine. And it's not running native on my laptop, it's running in a virtual machine. And so we're going to, this code basically reaches in and then grabs some list data out of it. And so the way it does that is first it sets up some authorization with SharePoint. Because it's in a virtual machine and I'm not on the same domain as that virtual machine is, I'm not going to use NTLM authentication. I've set up my SharePoint server to support both NTLM and Forms Auth. And so my code can be run off box anywhere in the network, and it's going to log into that SharePoint box and grab that data. So again, when I publish the code, this is a whole talk in and of itself about how you can do remote Forms Auth with SharePoint programmatically. But I've got a helper class here called Authorization that takes a username and a password and helps me do that. Then what I'm going to do is I'm actually requesting, now I could do this slightly more simply in an on-prem scenario, but for the purposes of the demo, I just wanted to show you how to get data out of SharePoint from a REST endpoint. So in this case, I'm setting up a GET request to call a SharePoint REST endpoint to get list data out of that list. And so I need to set this accept header called application whack JSON to be able to get a JSON response from SharePoint. This cookie jar line is all about taking the Forms Auth cookies that I did during authentication and reattaching them to my next request so that it knows who I am. I've already authenticated, that's what my authorization helper class did for me. And now I just reattach the cookies that it issued since I've already been authenticated. So that's what that line does. Then it basically goes and gets the response from SharePoint. And so up the top here, you can see the URL is underscore VTI bin. Anybody know what VTI stands for? Ink, there you go, USB stick. So VTI bins are hang up from Vermeer Technologies Inc., which originally was the creators of what became FrontPage. And we've still got hang-ups legacy things in the URL because of that. So VTI bin listdata.svc is the list data service that you can go in and get OData from lists and libraries and so forth. And here I'm saying I just want to dig into the WAC sales list. Now, by default, this will give you an Atom feed back. OData supports Atom and JSON, and so the way you get, rather than getting Atom, I wanted to get JSON, and that's why I had to set that request header. And that signifies to SharePoint to go send JSON back instead. Okay, so I make my request, I check whether we've got OK, I read in the response, and then I'm using JSON.net, which is a library you can get through online. It's an open source library for dealing with JSON in .NET apps. Really cool library, plugging a fellow Kiwi, the guy that wrote it. And so it basically takes that JSON packet that you saw in Fiddler and deserializes it to what I've got called an SP sales object, or an array of SP sales objects. Okay. Now, for each of these sales, I go through and I grab some information out of it and I send it back up the chain. And the reason I'm pointing this out is because I'm doing a little bit of fiddling with it along the way. So here you can see that I'm grabbing the title out of the SharePoint list and changing it to the company object of the object I want further up the chain. Theoretically, you shouldn't need to do this. You can just pass it all the way back up. But I quite like having these sort of interrupts along the way to be able to tweak data along the way just so I'm either only sending up what I need or can manipulate it in progress as it goes up the chain. So it simply just returns these sales objects back up. So that's going to go back up across Service Bus to our calling service in Azure. So now let's take a look at that. So that's the console app. That simply just digs into SharePoint, grabs the data, and sends it back up the line in that get sales call. In Azure, I've got a second project called SharePoint Calling Service, and this is just a web role that I've deployed into Windows Azure. This could be one of those new funky websites, lightweight sort of website options that Azure gives you too. That's an option, but I'm just using a web role for this today. I mean, there are a few files in here. The important ones are sales data service, so this guy here, and sales data entry that we're going to use in a little bit. Sales data service is the endpoint that you saw me hit in Fiddler to get that data back. So let's dig into the code behind that and take a look at what it does. Again, it's pretty straightforward. It really just has one call or one endpoint that I can hit called whack sales. So in Fiddler, you saw the whack sales on the end. That's going to call this WCF service. It's going to call this method to get the sales data. And then it's going to use the service bus to grab the listener and talk to it. So there's some service bus goo that you have to create. You give it your service bus name in secret and those sorts of things. You give it some binding information. You agree on a interface that you're going to talk to each other, so this iSales data channel interface. And then you can call methods on it, just like you would with an object. So the real important piece here is this bit here where I say channel.getSales. And so that's calling that getSales method on-prem in that console app that you saw just now. And then it's going to return it back up the chain to the caller. So in our case, it would be that JavaScript and jQuery sitting in SharePoint Online. So the jQuery is going to call this. It's going to proxy it through Service Bus. The command line app gets it, calls whatever line of business system you want, packages up the data, and bop, 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 all the way back up the chain. Okay, so let's see how this goes. So let me just recompile my command line app here. Let me show you that website, actually, first before we move on. So up here I've got my on-prem SharePoint site. I've got a site on that VM that I've created. And I've got the sales list, which you saw in the SharePoint code at the end of the list data service, WAC sales. It's going to get the data from this list as in an OData feed in JSON format. And you can see I've got three rows. So it's slightly different from my hard-coded responses. So we're going to we should see three results come back when we run this. So I'll simply run that command line app again. Let's wait for that guy to start up. Let me go back to our SharePoint Online site here. Wait for this sucker to start. Okie doke. So that's ready to go. Now if we refresh this page. Let me just stick a breakpoint actually in here, just to show you what it's calling. So this is a breakpoint in my console app. Show the content. The JavaScript will run. Our breakpoint gets called in our console app on-prem, does its work. We hit F5 to continue. We got a sales data request. And then if you bubble back up now, you can see we've got three rows in SharePoint Online. So hopefully this gives you an idea of how you could utilize Service Bus to try and bridge that divide. If you've already got things like reverse proxy set up, like UAG or similar, then you can leverage those already. You don't necessarily have to go the Service Bus route, but it is quite a nice option for you if you don't have any of that stuff in place. Okay. Now, let me jump back to slides and we'll continue. Okay, so that's consuming from on-prem. Now, so what we saw that same JavaScript, jQuery, Visual WebPart deployed as a sandbox solution in SharePoint Online, the exact same thing, except now with the back end, we're using the Azure Service Bus to call the on-prem listener, calling off to SharePoint. And like I said, that could have been any sort of system there. So that's getting into lob systems, right, from SharePoint Online, but what happens if you want to get out to SharePoint Online? Like when I first, the beginning of the session, I mentioned, you know, lots of people want to build systems that use SharePoint Online, maybe for working with partners that deal with your company, and you want to push documents out to it, for example, is a really common scenario where you want to push documentation or whatever it happens to be out to SharePoint Online. How do you do that? And it's a little more tricky than just using the out-of-the-box SharePoint APIs, and the primary reason is because of authentication. On-prem, you can use NTLM Auth or maybe Forms Auth or something like that to hook up with the SharePoint APIs to push it into SharePoint. The client-side object model supports Windows Auth and Forms Auth options, so there's not much work you have to do for that. But the problem comes in SharePoint Online. You might want to obviously push this data in, but the authentication gets in your way. So there are some remote API options you can use to do this. You can still use the client-side object model, and you can still use the web services that are available, but you have to do a little bit more legwork to make it work. And so I'm going to walk through what that is. So I put a little ninja on here because this is kind of like the ninja topic. If you dig into the code about how this works, it gets real funky. So it uses Windows Identity Foundational Framework. I can never remember what the F is. Basically to talk to the Office 365 STS to get a authentication token. And it uses the WIF framework to do it. And there are really two types of authentication with SharePoint Online. The first is what I call headed, which is where a user is present in an application. Say, for example, a Windows application, right, where it needs to log into SharePoint Online as that user and do something. Then you can pop a browser up. You can pop a browser dialog from your application and point it at the right place and have them log in and then capture the cookies that come back after that login is done and then attach them to your subsequent API requests. And it'll let you go through. If you really want to learn all the funky ins and outs about how this works, go read the MS-OFBA protocol documentation on MSDN. Awesome light reading for nighttime. And you can learn all about how this works. This is how the Office applications do it, right? If you're in Office and you go to save a document into SharePoint Online and you haven't already authenticated, then it pops you a little dialogue and you log in and then you can save the document. So that's the same way. Headless is where I like to say where a user isn't necessarily present, and this is usually a programmatic like service that runs or a job that runs or something like that. So you don't have any user interaction and you only need to be programmatic. And there are ways to do that as well, again using the WIF framework. Now, I'm going to show you how this works. We're not going to get into all the exact code about using WIF and all sorts, but I have some links at the end of the deck to a couple of blog posts that I wrote on this topic, or these topics, and you can download there's a real small helper library to do headless authentication with Office 365, and you simply include a new class or two in your application, and then you give it the username and password that you want to talk to SharePoint Online with, and then it does the authentication for you. And in the demo we'll go through, I'll show you how that looks from calling code. But like I say, go follow the links on this blog post if you have more interest in this topic. So basically the way this works is, in this example, in my demo, I've got this Azure application that this could equally be an on-prem piece of code. It doesn't have to be an Azure at all. It's just for my purposes of the demo, I've got an Azure app. In fact, I've got an Azure website. So it uses WCF and WIF to go talk to the Office 365 STS to say, I want to log in with this username and password. And what happens is, so those credentials are passed down to the Office 365 STS, and then back, if they're valid, obviously, then you get some information, and it's not entirely, I've got a cookie picture here, but it's not entirely a cookie at this stage, but it looks like a cookie in my picture. So you get some token information that comes back to your Azure application. This diagram is not like 100% technically accurate. There's some funny redirections that happen in here. But the general gist is that it issues you some token information. This is what this library helps you automate. Then you take that cookie and token that you get given, and you attach it to your subsequent client-side object model or web service requests as an HTTP header. And so then when you make the call, SharePoint knows, oh, you're a real user, you're this person, and I trust this token, and it can verify that token and so forth, and then it'll let you at the data. So you basically attach that to your API calls, send it to SharePoint Online, and it says, cool, you're golden, and here comes your data. So here are the links to the two blog posts that I wrote, headed and headless. Depending on which scenario you're in, you can pick and choose which one. And it talks all about how it works under the covers, and it has the links to the libraries you can download to include in your code. There are some apps out there that use this today, like if anybody uses Caligo. Does anybody use Caligo for SharePoint? No, it's like it's kind of like SharePoint workspaces to connect up to SharePoint. They use this code to pop the SharePoint Online browser dialog and have you log in to authenticate you. So it's working out there in real products, which is great to see. Okay, so let's take a look at another demo here. Let me just log back in. My machine keeps locking itself. And show you how this works. So, in this case, I've got that Azure application that I mentioned before. So, let's stop that. That Azure application is, where is it? I've got it in my SharePoint calling service app. So again, it's the same Azure application that hosts that WCF endpoint that I showed you that returns the JSON, except in this case, I've added a new salesdataentry.aspx web form, and I've added some code to it. So if we look at what that looks like, if I just go up here and say salesdataentry, super simple page. It's running up in Azure. You could say cjsdemoapp.cloudapp.net, salesdataentry.aspx. And it's really actually not sales data. I've got pushing it into a movie app, movie list in SharePoint Online. So the naming's a little funky. So you give it a title and a length. You say, I don't know, what's your favorite movie? Born? This will do. Born Identity. I think that's the way you spell it, right? And length, let's say, oh, that was a crazy long movie, 345 minutes. And you click save, and the code behind runs, and then it just simply says added. And so in the back end, what's happening is that code is using that auth code, authenticating SharePoint Online, and pushing it into this movies list that I've got over here. So if I click into the movies list, you can see we've got the different movies here, and now we've got Bourne down here of 345 minutes. So now it's in SharePoint Online list data, and we can start doing stuff with it that way. So you can use this for list data. You can push documents up this way. You can call any of the web services that are available to do things that aren't necessarily covered through the client-side object model that you might want to do. And the same technique works for both of those remote APIs that you have available. If you want to get real funky, then you can start using the front page RPC calls with this as well and attaching the cookies the same way. So let's take a look at that code. So the code behind for that file is, again, pretty straightforward. What I need to do is I need to give it a couple of parameters for my helper class, which gives it the URL to my site, the username that I want to use, and the password. Obviously, my password for the site is not star, 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 but for the purposes of this demo, I didn't want to give everybody my password, so I did that in the source. Otherwise, I'd be finding all sorts of things happening in my site after the session. So those are the details you need to pass to this authentication helper library. And it's called MS Online Claims Helper, and so that's the object that we need to use to help do this authentication. So on my button click event, really all that happens is I set up my MS Online Claims Helper object and pass it my username, password, and the site that I want to get to in SharePoint Online, and then I just go about using the client context the exact same way, and client context is the client-side object model code. So then I pretty much go about using it exactly the same way. The only difference is this next line of code, which is executing web request. And this is adding an event handler to the client context object. When it goes to make the web request to SharePoint Online, this event handler hijacks it first and does some things. So you can probably imagine what that is. It is, if we jump down to that code, it's reattaching the authentication cookies that we had from the authentication that happened above. So each request, we've got to make sure that we've got those auth cookies in the header so that SharePoint knows who we are. Otherwise, you'll get a declined, like a not authenticated. Yep. So that executes, that puts the cookies back in this cookie container for the request. And then if we jump back up to the code, then all it's doing is it's loading the web object. It's saying, I want to grab the movies list. It's getting it by title, movies here, pretty straightforward. Then I create a new item, a new movie item, with giving it a title and a length from the text boxes that we filled out in the page. And then I go and I want to make sure I load that movie list and then execute the request and then update my little label that says added, right? So you saw this run end to end. Now this could equally be called from anything on-prem. This code doesn't have to run in Azure. The only two caveats that you might want to consider if you deploy this into Azure, you've got some references to consider. So you need the SharePoint. Where have I lost them? Microsoft. There we go. Microsoft SharePoint client and the runtime libraries. These are available in a redistributable that you download from Microsoft. When you add them to your project as references, only if you're going to use this in Azure do you need to do this. You need to switch them to be copy local true, because Azure doesn't automatically have these DLLs already up in the cloud. So you need to include them. You've got to make sure they're included in your package. If you try to execute this code, you'll get these funky error messages about can't find assembly and all that sort of stuff about the client context. So that's just a tip for using the CSOM in Azure. Okay, so that pushed the thing to the movie list. Now, this also offers up a couple of other little options here. This could either be, you know, an on-prem WinForms app, web application, timer job, anything like that on-prem. But I did it and I put it in Azure for a reason, because I want to show you another little technique. I deployed this page in Azure, which means we should be able to get to it from wherever, right? We can get to it when we're outside the office. And we can use that in SharePoint Online. So we can say, we can come up into SharePoint Online here and say, what I've done is just created a new page, this movies data entry page, which simply, again, this is the HTTPS problem again, shopping up, so I'll show data. And I've just iframed in that page from Azure into SharePoint Online. So you can start building widgets that you deploy out in Azure. If you don't want to do it in jQuery, and jQuery is pretty cool if you're that way inclined. You can do all sorts of things with UI and building apps just in the browser that way. But if you want to get the full power of something like MVC or to build an application, then you can do that. Deploy into somewhere like Azure or something that's reverse proxied and then poke it into your SharePoint application this way. Now, there are some other considerations we'll talk about in a second around security. I'll mention some of the options you've got around keeping these things secure so that only the right people get access to it. But you can come in and add your movie data just like we did before, and it's that exact same page running, and it'll go stuff it into the movies list. Oh, somebody's found my URL. Who's the clever guy in the room? You guessed my password, nice. Perfect. Yeah, FOTC, yeah, exactly. Perfect. It's either that or The Hobbit. It's pretty easy. So that's the only two things we're really famous for. Okay, so that pushed it into my movies list. And so this gives you a second option. If you don't want to build, you know, a web part or something with jQuery, if you want the power of things like MVC, then you can iframe in part of an application like this. And then between using JavaScript and something like this, you can build fairly rich applications. Like I said, there are some security issues you've got to deal with, and we'll talk about those when we jump back to slides in a sec. Alrighty. Okay, so I won't go over this. We used the WIF, we used the STS, we extracted all the cookies, we stuck them on the CSOM call. Download that helper library from those blog posts. If you want to do this yourself, don't try and write the code again. It's pretty hairy and horrible, and it took a long time to figure out. So feel free to reuse. But that's a good way to get data back into SharePoint Online. And so the other way to do, so you can use something I failed to mention in the jQuery example was that you can also use that to push data back down the pipe, down service bus, back to on-prem, rather than just requesting data from it as well, if you want to do it that way too. And then this option's great for obviously getting it back out into SharePoint Online. Okay, so dealing with the big elephant in the room around all of this is around identity and security. There are some options. So this kind of summarizes some of the options you have. Basically, the three columns correspond to pretty much, give or take, the three demos we did. We didn't use UAG, but we're using Service Bus in its place to get across the firewall. UAG, like I mentioned, gives you this really cool forms to NTLM translation. That means you can use forms on the outside so that you could authenticate from pretty much anything, right? It's just posting data and getting a token back that you attach to subsequent requests, and then have UAG take care of logging into the on-prem system on your behalf using NTLM or Windows Auth. In my case, I deployed stuff to Azure, and so there are some options here that you can use for this. ACS is a service in Azure that you can wire up. It provides the ability out of the box, in fact, to secure endpoints to a number of different providers. It's all using claims auth under the covers and SAML and all of these kinds of things. But in a nutshell, out of the box, they support Facebook auth, Google ID, Live ID. Pretty sure that's it. Maybe open? Not sure. Sorry? So those are the three out-of-the-box providers. But you can also go in and hook up your own ADFS infrastructure, which means that you can start authenticating people against your endpoints using your on-prem enterprise credentials. So an example of this is, well, first up, you've got to have ADFS deployed, ADFS2 deployed. And so in my examples, how that would have worked is, that web page that I had for entering movie data, I could have secured that website in Windows Azure with ACS and made it accept claims from ACS and that sort of thing. And then when they hit that page, they'd log in, it would redirect them off to the enterprise, the ADFS system that the enterprise provided. They'd log in, whatever authentication system that happens to be. Secure ID, username and password, certificates, whatever you've got going there. Then ADFS and ACS have a little party and figure out who you are and what claims you've got, and that all gets passed back to your application as a set of claims that you can trust of who that person is. So that's one way to authenticate them. Now also, the good thing about this is you can hook up SharePoint Online to the exact same thing. So you can federate your identity with SharePoint Online to that exact same ADFS infrastructure. So once you're logged in with SharePoint Online using ADFS, when you hit that page and iframe in your application, depending on your auth system, you may or may not get another auth prompt. Hopefully not, right? Because you've just logged in through SharePoint Online, and depending on your ADFS setup, it probably already knows who you are. And so it'll bounce you through that ADFS system, giving you back the claims back out to your website. So that could be an option there. So you log into SharePoint Online once, and you're done. You can also, so that's great for enterprises that want to use enterprise credentials. You can also hook that up to WCF endpoints. So it's not just those web pages or the web forms that I showed you, but you can hook it up to those WCF endpoints as well. So that if, for example, you want to secure your WCF endpoint using ADFS, you can hook it up in the same way with ACS, and then you programmatically would end up talking off to your ADFS server using the WIF framework that I've spoken about to do the programmatic authentication and to get back the tokens you need to attach to subsequent calls to that WCF endpoint. The sort of the cheap and cheerful option is shared tokens. You can also say, with Azure, you could say, with Service Bus in particular, I should say, this, I should have made another bullet here. You can also say, just accept calls wherever anybody supplies this particular token in the call. So if you don't want to go the ACS route and you don't want to go, if you don't want to go the ADFS route and hook up all that stuff, then you can share tokens between the apps and it's kind of a cheap and cheerful way of authentication. It's kind of the shared token option. With Azure Connect or Virtual Network, if you set up that VPN between the two environments, then you've got tons more options. You can use Windows Auth and domain credentials to log into your lob systems direct from code in Azure. So that might be a nice idea there as well. You can join VMs that live in Azure to your Active Directory on-prem, all that stuff. So there's tons of different options with that. And then working with data into SPO, again, if you need to deal with online ID, then you can use that WIF framework to take care of that for you. You're effectively impersonating somebody. You have to give it a username and a password. So you've got to figure out where you get that from, obviously, and where you store that. That's a consideration to take into account. Also, SharePoint Online has this nifty solution where you can create service accounts, which are accounts that live in SharePoint Online or Office 365 that don't count against your user account. So you could create a service account that does this to push data in, like if you're migrating documents up there or something, and it doesn't count against your user account. So your licenses are not decremented for that. So now this is one of the drawbacks currently with this is this impersonation. So you have to have a user account that you do this with. We don't have the ability to do it any other way at this stage. Okie doke. Where'd my clicker go? So that's some security options. So in summary, SharePoint Online at the outset looks pretty limited in what you can do with development. But if you're willing to think a little bit out of the box with being able to call external services and call and push data into SharePoint Online, there are options if you know the right techniques. And hopefully we've covered a few of those today, using JSON and jQuery for doing UI-based application development in SharePoint Online and using Visual Web Parts in the sandbox to push that into SPO and so forth. So there are options for the APIs if you know how to use them and attach cookies and so forth. And hopefully there are people out on the internet that have figured these things out and have libraries available to help you do that stuff. And then consider using Azure to your advantage to leverage things like Service Bus to get on-prem. Don't use it as a way to circumvent enterprise security, so talk to your IT department about it and make sure they're all cool with it. But it is an option, and it means that it's potentially far lower cost than having to do all that infrastructure work yourself and deploy reverse proxies and all that sort of stuff. And so the things that we talked about today were mostly Service Bus in Azure, but also briefly touched on ACS. So I'd like to thank you all very much for coming along to the talk. I'll be available for questions afterwards. If anybody has any, please let me know. I love this stuff, so I'd love to hear what you're doing with SharePoint Online. If you want to learn more about this stuff, then there's a training kit that Microsoft have put out, the SharePoint and Windows Azure Development Kit. It doesn't specifically deal just with SharePoint Online, but it has a whole lot of other topics around working with Azure and SharePoint better together. So I'd go check that out. Also, there's some related content, OSP 334, which was by Steve this morning. And you can watch the recording if you didn't go along to that. And OSP 302, which is happening later on this afternoon, by Donovan Follett. So he's talking about another topic. And then, for some reason, when I originally submitted my slide deck, I thought my session was yesterday. So that's why it says, see me at the ATE evening. Obviously, that doesn't happen. But I will be around after the session for any questions and so forth. So thanks again for everybody coming and open for questions.